Hi, this is Barry List of Informs, and we're talking today with Ali Uku of Capital University. Christmas shopping is behind us, but a byproduct of shopping, consumer returns, is always with retailers. Some people fraudulently return things they bought. How should retailers design return policy with this in mind? Professor Uku, together with Lindsay Daly of Capital University and H. Moog Yaila Kulu of Rensselaer Polytech, have written Serving Fraudulent Consumers, The Impact of Return Policies on Retailers' Profitability. It's published in the new Informs Journal, Service Science. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
NPR, National Public Radio, did a recent story contrasting the return policy of L.L. Bean, which lets you return till the end of time, with its competitor, REI, which feels like it was being abused by a liberal return policy. What do you hear from retailers about their return policies?
Well, I see that some retailers, they're starting to see the damages that they create by offering liberal return policies. And this has been showing up more and more on trade journals and scholarly publications like I have done with Dr. Daly and Dr. Miguel Yaila Kulu. For example, REI is Recreational Equipment Incorporated. It has had an endearing nickname, Return Everything Incorporated.
Oh.
And it was one of the... so that was... they started to get some returns, even such as backpacks or snowsuits used from 1970s.
Goodness.
And their policies have allowed them to allowed customers to return them, so they couldn't say no. And even getting them back, on top of it, they will give the price difference. So it shows that there is some. Essentially, they say that these returns, the large number of these returns, are coming from small number of customers. So there has to be a better match between customers understanding. Maybe the spirit of the return policy of the retailers. So there's some issues going on in here, and it's beginning to increase.
Now, in the introduction to your study, you mentioned that product returns are on the rise. What are you seeing in terms of what does that mean on the rise?
Well, it is particularly increasing in recent decades with the availability of technology. Now, people, particularly in North America, in the United States, and here we have a big consumers culture, big shopping culture. And when you look at, for example, the holiday or gift shopping, I would say, or maybe mass shopping, we can call it, you are essentially buying some goods for some others, which increases the likelihood that the match between the giftee and the product will be decreased because you're shopping for others.
And you're guessing what their tastes are, and you might be wrong.
Exactly, yeah. I'm focusing more on the fraudulent returns, which we'll be talking more in a bit, I suppose.
Right.
So that increases the chances that returns will be increasing. And also, mind you, we shouldn't forget about the competitive pressures that we have in North America. And retailing is the biggest industry. And we have some figures as well. According to 2011 National Retailer Federation survey, consumers returned an estimated of $217 billion worth of merchandise. This is huge.
Yes, that's a tremendous amount.
It is a very big amount, and this is an increase to 8.9% of total sales, up from 8.1% from 2010. So this is almost about a 10% increase.
With so many items being returned, does that mean that retailers are losing profits through these returns?
That is definitely correct. These returns chew away at retailers' profits, for sure. Although the intention to provide return policies is to give some, or is to relieve the risk of consumers so that they can return the product, and that's a good thing on consumers' perspective, it doesn't come free. returns definitely reduces the net sales, but also the value of the return merchandise can decrease. For example, it might not be a hot-selling item anymore by the time that item is returned. And of course, there are costs associated with reverse logistics, such as shipping back, restocking, refurbishing if need be, and the like. So these costs all contribute to the bottom line of the whole retailing industry.
What do you mean by fraudulent returns for the purposes of this study?
The fraudulent returns will be those illegitimate product returns, including returns of used or consumer damaged products. An example would suit well. For example, let's think about a baby crib. You bought a baby crib and you used it, and now the baby is grown, and you have the it still fits in the return period, so you return the baby crib back to the retailer. So you extracted the whole value from that product, and you're returning it back and get the full refund.
And
that
probably it's not in resellable condition, if it's an example like that.
On top of that, yeah, that's true. So one distinction will be that the fraudulent returns will be valid for the quality is not an issue. So when we look at the returns between the manufacturer and the retailers can return the product to manufacturers because of some quality defective issues. So that's a separate problem than what we have been studying in this article, in this research. That we are looking at the consumer and retailer relationship. So the consumer, if the consumer is returning the product because it simply didn't match the taste of the consumer, then it's a legitimate, non-fraudulent return. But if it did match, and then the consumer is returning the product because they had enough value during the consumption period, then it's a fraudulent return. And that happens.
And how bad a problem is it?
Well, it is becoming a more of an issue, according to an article that showed up Bloomberg's Business Week in 2012. Actually, the return fraud cost was estimated to be $8.9 billion in 2012,
which is a sizable amount.
It is a very sizable amount compared to the overall $250 million in 2012.
Yeah. And are things as bad in different industries, clothing, let's say, versus electronics?
We see the fraudulent behavior happening more, or we can call it fraudulent proclivity, occurring more in clothing industry. Again, according to a recent article that showed it in Journal of Marketing Management by King et al., they found that almost 50% of the returns in the clothing industry, almost 50% returns count, almost 50%.
So basically people are wearing clothes and for whatever reason they tire of it, they return it even though they've gotten full value. There's nothing wrong with the clothing itself.
Exactly. But also, mind you, as consumers, we would like to maximize our value. So if you're given the opportunity to return, and it's all in legal binding, there's no way why they shouldn't do it. So there's some psychological issues happening there that we have to look at closely, and particularly from retailers' perspective. So this, the impact will be different in electronics. For example, the return periods are different in electronics industry because the retailer return policies, they vary across products and the retailers. If you think about Apple's App Store, for example, they have an all sales final policy. So that's very strict as opposed to L.L. Bean, where they offer an unlimited returns period. So that's very lenient.
Let me remind our listeners that I'm Barry List of Informs, and you're listening to a podcast on fraudulent consumer returns with Professor Ali Uku of Capital University. So let's go directly to your study now. What did you examine? What was it that you were trying to learn about?
Well, this research problem had little to do with my PhD thesis. It was I essentially heard a couple of people talking about the return of the baby crib, and then it created this question to look deeper into the return policies at retailers. This was way back in Canada in around 2008. And when I started my work at Capital University at the School of Management as a professor of business administration, my colleague, Dr. Daly, she is an expert in consumer behavior, and I was talking about the fraudulent probability. And from there on, we started and later on joined forces with Dr. Yayla Küllü from Rensselaer Polytechnic. So what we were looking at is surprisingly, maybe I should say, that I didn't find any direct or mathematical model where we set the optimal return period. And this variation among the return policies across the products and also across the retailers creates some confusion on the consumer as well. So the question was, what will be the optimal price and the return period, which determines the return policy for our product?
And how did you structure the study? How did you conduct your research?
Well, we first look at the extant literature. There's not so much on this. More studies are done between the relationship on the manufacturers and the retailers, but not so much on the retailers and the consumers. And we look at the secondary data, collected some information from current literature, and looking at the trends, we developed a mathematical model, an analytical formal model that gives us the optimal price and the return period for a product which has some certain parameters, including holding cost, depreciation rate, and which also includes the consumer demand. So we can roughly say that this is a novel consumer-driven model that looks at the optimal return policy while including the effect of the fragile behavior.
So using the results of your study, if you were to work with a client who was a clothing retailer, what kind of data would you collect from this clothing retailer to design the optimal policy and product price?
The fundamental parameters will be foremost the marketing end of this problem is extremely important, and the consumer behavior is definitely a pivotal factor in determining the optimal return period. And also the price, because as the price increases, we found that the return proclivity or the fraudulent behavior decreases because you've been investing in more dollars, and it's more like you're investing in inventory that where you're tying up your cash. So we needed to look at what factors come into the consumer's decision-making process, whether to buy the product or not. And then when you buy the product, if it matches the consumer's taste, are you keeping it or are you returning it? And then if it's mismatching, are you returning it or keeping it as well? So when the product matches your taste and you are returning it, that will be the fraudulent return. Now, such factors as some parameters will be the depreciation sensitivity, hassle cost of returning, length of product life is important, probability of good match between the consumer's tastes, return period sensitivity. We have empirical results saying that consumers or a retailer who is providing return policy is more likely to increase the sales because the customers will be more, the demand base will be increased because of customers are sensitive to return policies in a good way. So that's another factor that gets into our model. Customer valuation, salvage value.
Well, what do you mean by customer valuation?
Customer valuation in pricing models, essentially what will be the maximum value or the reference price for a consumer to buy that product. What is your price range when you decide to buy that product? It's $100. Your reference price is $100, and the product is product selling price is $90. You're buying that product. If it's $110, then you will not be able to buy it. So that's the customer valuation.
And I assume that this is a dynamic that if you were doing this on behalf of a specific retailer, you would be collecting data and analyzing it and then going back and based on your model making adjustments.
That will be the next step. The model we developed in this paper is a generic one. It builds on a particular product. So it's a parametric model, an analytic model. So for any product, if we have those parameters that I mentioned briefly before, we can find the optimal retailer return policy for that product. So that product might be at Albertsons, that product might be at Walmart, Kroger, anywhere else.
We only have time for a couple more questions.
Sure.
So based on your findings, what advice do you give to retailers who want to design or redesign their return policy?
I would say that they have to be very careful about setting their return policies. And rightfully, all the consumers, they would like to maximize their values. Nobody wants to be called a fraudulent consumer. And mind you, when these returns happen at the customer service areas, those service encounters create a lot of tensions and reactances between the consumers and the people serving for the returns. So it is understandable that the returns are a good thing, but they have to be planned optimally. And the retailers, they shouldn't just jump on the wagon because some other competitor is applying, say, very lenient return policy. So they have to recheck their policies and maybe use more analytical tools to set some better parameters on their policies. And we have, at this day and age, we have more information on the consumer's behavior and actually on their return behavior as well. So we can use retailing analytics, if you will, to better determine our return policies, which, if appropriately applied, brings in higher profits to the retailers. And also, I have words for consumers, too. We shouldn't be, consumers should be careful when they're buying their products, because at the end of the day, all these returns, the cost of these returns are ditched on consumers, to the retailers' selling prices. Somehow they're in the equation there.
So in addition to the inconvenience of making a return, consumers should remember that the cost gets passed along to consumers one way or the other.
Exactly.
Final question, if retailers want to plan now for next Christmas, do you have any advice for them?
I will. Like I said, they should be very careful about setting the policies, and particularly during Christmas times, the dynamics change. Most of the consumption or shopping occurs for people who are buying for other people, so that increases the probability of returns. And currently, we are at the returns period because we just passed by Christmas, and most return periods they include 3 months or a whole year or, you know, unlimited return periods. They should be careful when they're setting their return periods on a product basis. But they should do do it so that the consumers are not ambiguous about the types of returns. What I mean by that is, if a consumer used to return a product, a particular product, within a year, the return period for a particular product is a year within a particular retailer, and if that consumer buys another product and thinks that it will be a year again for the return period, but actually if it is not, that will create some psychological reactance from the consumer side, which will not end up in a good situation. So they have to make it easier for the consumers to understand their retail policies, maybe put some more signs or make sure that they're reading the policies as they shop. And we find that consumers are actually about half of the consumers are actually reading the retail policies.
So basic communications is something that would help a great deal.
Exactly, from both ends, yeah.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Professor Ali Ulku of Capital University. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Barry.
And thank you for listening to Informs Today, a podcast by the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more information about analytics, operations research, and this series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching.